Andy, what does a thick offseason look like for the Mets? So much talk about bring Pete back, bring Diaz back, add more. Is it realistic to expect that the Mets can bring Diaz and Alonso back and go get, let's say, a top starter?
I think the main thing to remember, the primary thing to keep in mind, Sal, about the Mets offseason and their goals are it is an urgency to get back into the playoffs and to be that team, that franchise on the ascent that they've been in the Steve Cohen era. And it seemed like it was going to a whole other level in 24 and then signing Soto. So whatever they think it's going to take to get themselves back to that level, they're going to be ambitious and aggressive to get there. Now, so if they decide, if David Stearns and his people that Cohen trusts to make these decisions decide that we should be paying for a Diaz and Alonso and then trading for whether it's Tarek Skubal or whether it's a Freddy Peralta, mm-hmm. a guy that they know, the front office knows from Milwaukee, their time there, they're going to do that. But if anything's realistic. They have the resources. They have the ambition. But all these decisions are going to be approached in isolation, and the Mets are currently trying to figure out where they stand on things like, which is normal for this time of year. Where do you stand on Alonso? Where do you stand on Diaz? How far are you stretch for these guys? So it's too soon to say they're going to do A, B, C, and D because they haven't decided yet. But there's no limit on their desire to get this thing back on track. I can say that.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, November the 9th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com website. Sign up for premium content, less than a cup of coffee a month, free chat, all the updates that you need from the show. Come on over, check us out, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. Big show we have for you tonight. We have officially kicked off the hot stove season. Joining me in just a little bit, our good friend from SI, Pat Ragazzo. What's he hearing? He's already thrown out some rumors of some directions the Mets may go. The theme of today's show is life without Pete Alonso, life without Edwin Diaz. I know. It's not a life that all of you really want to think about, but after some of the conversations that we've heard on the rumor mill throughout the week, obviously both Pete and Diaz opting out of their contracts, Diaz having a qualifying offer attached to him, the possibility that there is going to be a Mets team going forward without these two stars is real. So we're going to talk about it. We'll get Pat's perspective, and then we'll round out with the mailbag. I know we skipped it last week. We have some commentary from the audience, and we'll get to that as well. So, life without Pete Alonso and Edwin Diaz. I'm going to go through a couple of scenarios today, maybe some directions the Mets could go. Let me be clear, and I talked about this last week, and we've been spending the better part of the last 4 or 5 weeks since the season ended too early for the Mets, breaking down every part of the roster, giving options, giving the direction. And you already know, and if you don't, if you're just tuning in for the first time, what the Talking Mets podcast here and yours truly would like to see. From the starting pitching perspective, try to pursue an ace, but do not break the bank unless you could sign some kind of extension. Can't trade for a Tarek Skubal without some kind of 72-hour window, i.e. like they got with Santana many years ago. I don't know how realistic it is to land a big fish like that. Yes, I know the Mets have the prospect capital. Will Detroit try to trade Skubal? Will the Pirates try to trade Skeens? Probably not. The Miami Marlins and Sandy Alcantara. I think he's the next step down, obviously, from those guys. I don't think he, since Tommy John's surgery, he could be put on the same plane as the two best pitchers in baseball. The Mets have the prospect capital, but will they get the opportunity to sign an extension for a Skubal? And that's critically important because of the kind of prospect capital you're going to have to give up. The Mets should then go out and try to see if they can acquire the next big arm that might put himself into a conversation to be in the top five or six of the league. A Joe Ryan, a George Kirby. Mets might better be served spending their prospect capital doing that. Going out on the free agent market, looking for an arm that can provide them innings. You hear Framber Valdez's name a lot. I like Dylan Cease, a guy that's going to miss a lot of bats, only going to cost you money, will probably, from some of the reports, only require a shorter-term deal, may want an opt-out, might want to have a deal like Blake Snell, reestablish himself after somewhat of a down year. Then on the offensive side, I talked about bringing back Pete Alonso, adding to the offense, maybe going out there and looking at some kind of defensive component players at second base and center field. Also, potentially, going with Diaz, bringing back a second closer in there. Is that someone like Rozel Iglesias? Is it Kyle Finnegan? Bringing back to Rogers to be a setup guy and somewhat of a change of pace or a change of arm slot. Those were some of the things that we talked about earlier in the offseason, not about ripping apart the offense, not about ripping apart this team, but using some of the prospects or figuring out what prospects do you want to keep. Do you want to keep Beatty? Do you want to keep Vientos? Do you want to keep Mauricio? What could you get for them? Eliminating some of the duplication that's out there. You have Carson Benj and Jet Williams on the way. Can they be a contributor to this team? So that was kind of where we've been at over the last few weeks. But more and more that you, and remember, we always get caught up in all this. Educated speculation versus real rumor mill versus discussion for clicks. This whole thing is a business model. You can't have 365 days a year of Mets baseball talk and not have some speculative conversation. You just can't. There's no way. And we do it here, too. I think we're a little more honest about it, and because we don't have the New York Post or the ESPN or Newsday or Daily News or whatever publication you want to call it, SNY, because we don't have that across our chest or behind us on a banner, it's pretty clear that, hey, this guy is just throwing out information to have dialogue and discussion. And, you know, when somebody like a Joel Sherman or Andy Martino, it's a little bit different. So I always say, and I'll be a broken record here, Martino's one of the more plugged-in guys with the Mets organization. When a Sherman or a Heyman say it, take it seriously. Sherman is pretty open about when he's playing GM. Heyman is very plugged in with Boris. We know that. But, you know, after that, beat writers, a lot of educated speculation, a lot of summary of what we already know, things that you'll see us do over at Beyond the Mic on our premium content arm of the show. So, this week there's been a lot of, hey, people predicting that Edwin Diaz will price himself out of the Mets' comfort zone. Maybe the Dodgers will be in on it. Maybe the Padres. Already now you're throwing the Yankees boogeyman into it. Pete Alonso, there's a lot of talk, and Andy Martino put it out there. Was it Andy Martino? I'm trying to think, but it was put out there in a lot of ways this week that the Mets may only re-sign Pete Alonso if it's a team-friendly deal. Now, I don't know what that means. Is a team-friendly deal a four-year deal, maybe around $27 to $30 million? Is Pete looking for a 6 or 7 year deal? Is Pete looking to get paid big time in terms of, you know, a home for the next 7 years where he could hit his 500 home runs and maybe put himself into the conversation for the Hall of Fame, something that's come up? I mean, that's obviously on the table. Who would give that to him? Is there a team that's going to give a first baseman with some declining defensive metrics who is shown to be more than one-dimensional? That was the one thing. Pete really improved his approach at the plate, was hitting more doubles this year, hit for a better average, was big down the stretch, actually hit over 300 a couple of months. Are you at a point where Pete Alonso in this later prime is put it all together and you could get 2 or 3 years, especially over the next 2 or 3 years, of maybe MVP-type Paul Goldschmidt-level performance? So, you know, that's the decision you make. But if the bidding gets to be, let's say, 7 years and $200 million, there's a vibe out there that the Mets are just not going to get involved or go that route with a Pete Alonso. And then always there's the thought, because David Stearns traded Josh Hader in Milwaukee, And there's this, and again, these are all narratives. We don't know really what the organization feels about both of these players because there's no leaks. Because analytics doesn't value closers, do you want to pay a closer who's got some miles on him, has seen some declining velocity, but is still at the top of the sport after his injury, a serious injury, mind you, after a terrible start to 2024, after the suspension for the sticky stuff, 2024 season, which saw him basically take 3 or 4 months to get back in the groove after he was out for a year, cost them the division because of his struggles earlier in the year. But ever since, you know, late 2024, maybe all-star break 2024 into this year, Diaz has been as good as ever. He's a guy that, when he doesn't have his best stuff, knows how to get outs, knows how to get outs. If he doesn't have his fastball, knows how to get outs if he doesn't have his slider going. Yes, he's a two-pitch pitcher. Yes, signing him to another four-year deal is a risk because if either one of those pitches goes, he's pretty much worthless. He's a guy that's not going to be able to get anybody out. And, you know, ultimately, the structure of what Diaz is worth was already out there. He had a couple of opt-outs and a team option for $20 million. So the only guarantees that Diaz had that he could control was about $36 to $38 million. And in his mind, he can make that up with another team on a contract. So basically, I think what Diaz wants is to get those 3 years guaranteed, probably about $20 million per. And then that fourth year, that's, I think, where the hangup might be. Do the Mets do some kind of deferred money, give him a fourth year? We'll see. But let's just play devil's advocate. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to go through a world without Alonso and a world without Diaz before we get to Pat Ragazzo. And the thing is this, these are two very popular players. These are players that are not just popular because of what they've done on the field, not because they have arguably the best closer in baseball since pretty much the COVID season, since Diaz had his baptism by fire in New York. A guy that was on the mound that, you know, got a big out against the Phillies a year ago, that ultimately is one of the best arms to have when you need to get three outs, maybe in baseball. When it comes down to it, if you have three outs to get and it's the ninth inning and you need that game, how many arms are you going to put up there over Diaz? Not many. Let's put it that way. The trumpets, the marketing, the excitement, the whole ninth inning celebration, the Mets have made a whole big thing about it with the fans, the connection. And then there's Pete Alonso. Yes, he has the home run record. He took this team by storm, homegrown prospect. Not only does he hit prodigious home runs, he's got that cartoon character name that the fans love. He has one of the most iconic home runs in team history in Milwaukee. It'll always be remembered regardless of where he goes after this season. He may not be a leader in the sense where he's Keith Hernandez out there, but he's an emotional leader and he's clutch and he wants the big spot. He wants the big city. He wants the big spotlight. And I understand all the things that advanced analytics say about his age. And I got some, and we'll read it off when we go to the newsletter, fans sending stuff in about why re-signing Pete is bad and how historically this could go bad. And believe me, I have put that out there. A year ago, I put that out there. I talked about that myself, about how, you know, Richie Sexson was a name that I brought up. You know, you guys get on my case for bringing up outdated names. Is Richie Sexson outdated? I mean, I got to tell you, yes, as you get later in your career, right-handed bats, especially if they slow down, it could get ugly. Albert Pujols' contract got ugly when he went over to Anaheim. And that was a guy that's way better than Pete Alonso. You know, Pete can only dream of putting up numbers that Albert Pujols put up. But look, it's a no-brainer on a four-year deal. If it gets to be 6 or 7 years, I think that's a conversation that becomes more difficult. Maybe there's some word that it's going to get like that. Just because Boris wants that doesn't mean it has to be that way. I will tell you the one thing that comes into play with Boris is the dragging. I don't think the Mets are going to let this drag past the winter meetings. They cannot let this drag into late January, early February. I think it wasn't good for the team last year. I think it held up the team's building of the roster. It was almost like once Soto happened, things stalled. And yes, they built a team that I think should have won more than 83 games. And the advanced metrics indicate they should have. And that's not why the pitching got injured. And that's not why things went south late in the year, because they made moves at the deadline that just didn't work out. But they can't afford to let that happen. But I'll tell you what. if they decide to walk away from either one of these guys, the backlash from the fans is going to be big. The backlash from the media is going to be big. And I don't care if they go out and they trade for a Tarek Skubal. Will that patch it over for a day or two or a week? Sure, it will, because it'll be a win the moment in the offseason moment. But at the end of the day, there's going to be a subset of the fans who are going to be angry because a lovable, popular player, homegrown, is no longer going to be in a Mets uniform. And I think if you had talked to me before that ninth inning in Milwaukee, and I know that seems like eons ago, and in a lot of ways it is, maybe it wouldn't have been the same way. But ever since he hit that home run in Milwaukee, ever since that whole Mets Fan Fest event where the fans went up to Cohen and Stearns and demanded Pete, ever since the bounce back season, arguably this past season was his best season, I just find it hard to believe that you could just walk away from this guy unless there's a stupid level contract that somebody's going to give him. Maybe the Red Sox go out there and say, hey, we're just going to give you stupid money to hit balls off the Green Monster for the next 7 years. 7-10. Then maybe the Mets have to think about that. I still find it hard to believe with all the uncertainty about the CBA, with how teams have to watch their tax dollars, with how there's only so many $30, $40, $50 million contracts you can have if you want to build a flexible, complete roster. This isn't the NBA. You can't win with just one or two people. And I'll tell you another thing with Diaz. Yeah, it's probably even more risky to bring Diaz back on a four-year deal because he has more likely of a chance of going bad. And forget the popularity of the Trumpets and everything like that. This is the best closer in team history. I don't want to hear about Johnny Franco. I watched Johnny Franco, and Johnny Franco was a great Met, and he got big outs, but he was a hittable closer. Romano Benitez was a hittable closer. Billy Wagner, at his point in his career, was a really good closer, and I know he's a Hall of Famer, but he was a hittable closer when he was with the Mets. And, you know, Jesse Orozco, up and down as a Mets. Randy Myers, up and down as a Met. Yeah, I'm dating myself. I'm going back in team history. That's because if you go back in team history of closers, Johnny Franco was the closer about 15 years. So it's not like they've had a ton of closers. And ever since Johnny Franco walked out of the building, you went through Braden Looper. You went through Billy Wagner. Yeah, you had Jerry's Familia. You had a couple of moments there. Couple. Frank Francisco, do you remember him? I mean, it's been a roller coaster of closers and a litany of heartbreak. And I'll tell you what, this guy Diaz, he stays around for the next 3 or 4 years. It's going to be a long time before you see someone of this level of dominance ever again. So if either of these guys walk, you better have a great plan B. And after the break, I'm going to tell you what some of those plan Bs look like. Some of them are okay, but all of them make me really nervous. I'll tell you that. And it's a situation where if any of these plan Bs goes dreadfully bad, kind of like Frankie Montas bad, then we might have some ugly moments on talk radio and at Citi Field this summer instead of talking about some good baseball. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, life without Pete Alonso, what does that look like? We'll be back with that and more right after this.
As the case of Alonso or Diaz, Dan, which one would you prioritize if you're the Mets?
If you're the Mets, look, I mean, obviously you'd love to have both of them back. I mean, you want to have like one and 1A, but if I have to pick one guy and one guy only, I mean, you have to go with Pete here just because you think about what this team was offensively. They actually took a small step back in 2025 as opposed to what they were in 2024. And this was a team that had Juan Soto, Pete Alonso, Lindor all having really, really strong years. I can't think about the possibility of how they're going to be able to put this together without that Pete lineup, especially in the middle of that batting order. Look, I understand there's limitations. I know that he's a liability at times defensively, but I just can't imagine this lineup, guys, without Pete Alonso.
So I totally get that, Dan, and for what it's worth, Alonso and Diaz should be Mets long-term, no debate, no questions asked. However, if I look at the free agent market, to me, there are ways you can go and replace Pete Alonso. I see Alex Bregman out there. I see Kyle Schwarber out there. I see Josh Naylor out there.
All right, we're back. So I find it really interesting, and the more that I hear from fans and I read online, and maybe this is more the analytically inclined pseudo-playing GM fan that we deal a lot with here over at the Talking Mets podcast, because I think Joe and Jane average fan, and there's way more of them than us out there, really wants Pete Alonso back. But put that aside for a minute. when you hear how many fans I see dismiss Pete because of defense at a non-premium position when he has the most scoops in a league, and yeah, he's never been good on bunts and throws to second, and certainly you're not going to see him make a play like Keith Hernandez made in Cincinnati back in 86, throwing somebody out at third base, charging down the line on a bunt. I mean, I would the throws to first, the yips. If I had to take a guess, I've said it 1,000 times since the season ended. If there's one thing he's working on this offseason, I know Pete's a worker. When he puts his head to it, he'll fix it. Is it psychological? Is it mechanical? Is something going on? And no, he didn't injure Senga. The fact that that throw, jumping up, injured Senga means that he was going to have his hamstring pop. It just would have been a matter of something else would have happened at that point. So I don't want to hear that. But the fact that you are, for the most part, hearing a subset of the fan base dismiss a guy who consistently drives in 120 runs, consistently hits 35 to 40 home runs, is clutch, wants to be here, is a homegrown player, has an energy level that brings a positive energy, at least I think. I haven't heard anything otherwise out of that clubhouse to the team. Yeah, is he probably going to be a DH as he gets longer in his career? Sure. Is that something that maybe will be a conversation with him and something that'll have to be coaxed into? A prideful guy that doesn't want to admit that he can't do something at any kind of competent level or above average level. I'm not saying he's elite at first base. He's an elite power hitter. He's an elite run producer. But like Keith Hernandez said, forget all that. Where the hell are you getting 125 RBIs and 35 home runs that easily? And a guy that doesn't just hit them, hits them in big spots. A guy that batted behind Soto at times, and Soto's in the running for the MVP. Quietly. We're not even really talking about that. And let's face it, if Pete's not in that lineup tomorrow, you know how many walks Soto's going to get? Because I'm not so sure that Brandon Nimmo is, as much as I love Brandon Nimmo, or Francisco Alvarez if he becomes somewhat of a hitter, or Mark Vientos if he's around, I just don't see those guys eliciting any kind of fear out of the opposition. They're just going to walk Soto. Soto's never going to get pitched to. So if Pete walks out that door, like some of you want, what's next? And let's be very clear. There has to be a focus on signing a right-handed bat. I don't want to hear about Kyle Tucker or Kyle Schwarber. And I'm not so sure Kyle Tucker, a guy that's going to want a 10-year deal, maybe not in the same price range as Soto, but not too far off. I don't think you could have two of those on one team, especially a guy that never stays healthy. So I'm going to put Kyle Tucker to the side. Plus, he's left-handed. Kyle Schwarber is a guy that certainly can make up for the home run scenario that Pete leaves with. He'll probably hit 50 bombs. He's a DH only. He's truly a true outcome player. Doesn't hit breaking pitches. You'll become very lefty. We've seen him struggle in the postseason against elite pitching. Schwarber's a guy that's dangerous, but Schwarber is a guy that can be pitched to in big spots. I've seen it throughout his career, especially with tough lefties. So I really don't want to hear about the lefty bats, because you have to remember something. The Mets believe a lot in Carson Bench. And I believe it was over on X where our buddy at TJ Stats, and let me make sure I have this correct over here. Thomas Nestico brought up some metrics from the minor leagues at three levels that Carson Bench was at. His walk rate, his strikeout rate, his swing percentage, his lift, his balls he hit in the air, they're all at or above some of the top 30 to 40 players in baseball. I mean, this is a guy that maybe like Michael Conforto, circa 2015, could come up mid-season. Guy that's probably going to hit 20 home runs, steal 20 bases, seems to have some good defensive metrics. Not sure how he's going to play in center field or he's going to be a corner, but I think he's going to get a chance to play in center field. I mean, you look at his scouting grades that they have, a 55 out of 60 on the hit, 55 out of 60 on the swing decisions, 50 out of 55 on power, 55 out of 55 on speed, 50 out of 55 on defense. That's an elite player. And by the way, he's left-handed. So he's left-handed, throws right-handed, left-handed. So you're going to become extremely lefty without Pete Alonso. So before you talk about Kyle Tucker, a big contract, or Kyle Schwarber, let's just realize that you're going to become very lefty. So what does that mean? That means you need to sign one of Bregman, or, and here's a name that nobody's talked about, myself included, who would have to change positions, but quite honestly, might be interesting in a non-Pete Alonso world. And he's not going to be cheap. Remember that. He's not going to be cheap at all. But that's Bo Bichette. So everybody talks about Bregman. Bregman's a veteran. Bregman's probably going to go out there and ask for a six-year deal. And Bregman comes, and we've talked about a professional hitter, good clubhouse guy, contact hitter, doesn't hit the ball hard. He's more of a spray-the-ball kind of guy. You know, hits left-handed pitching, good glove, good instincts at third base. I've read some scouting reports where maybe if he declines a little because he's not the most athletic guy at third base, maybe he's a guy that would have to switch positions, go over first. Maybe that's somewhat of a risk at a 6 or 7 year deal. He typically stays healthy. I know he had a quad injury last year that limited him to about 114 games. I like Alex Bregman as a piece with Pete Alonso, and maybe then you take Brett Beatty if you don't believe in Brett Beatty, or you feel Brett Beatty's better used as a trade chip for an elite starting pitcher, maybe in a Scooble deal, and you put Bregman with Pete, and all of a sudden now you round out that lineup. You got Bregman, you got Pete, you've got Lindor, you've got Nimmo. You know, your center field situation, you'll see how that plays out when it's Taylor or maybe it becomes Benj later on, Soto, and then you decide how you want to go about the DH spot. Maybe that's Vientos. Maybe you keep Vientos around. You know, it's a possibility where that makes more sense. Now, without Pete, I think you need to figure out who your next big right-handed bat can be. And Bo Bichette is a guy that, yes, he's a shortstop and he's not a great one. We already know that. That's not something that we have to get too deep into. But there's been talk where, and it hasn't come from Bichette himself, and I wonder if similar to how Carlos Correa was going to move from shortstop to third base when he signed with the Mets after the Giants' physical fell apart. I wonder if Bo Bichette would go out there and potentially do the same thing. Move over to second base. Maybe profile's a little bit better there, and he would be elite. A 25 home run, 90 RBI, 300 bat at second base. Now, he's going to cost you a lot. He's going to be, you know, 8 years, $200 million, maybe more. It's going to be a long-term contract, but he's only 27, 28 years old. You're getting him smack in his prime. He was big in the postseason. He was just on the national stage. Now, he's a guy that's going to chase a little bit, so he's not an on-base percentage guy. Keep that in mind. How would he profile at second base? He hits left-handed pitching. He's an aggressive hitter. And, you know, maybe, you know, if you look at, if the Mets went out and you had no Pete Alonso, and you went out and you signed Bregman, and you signed Bo Bichette, and then maybe you go and you either, if you want to stick with the lefty situation, you go after Josh Naylor, who will probably be a shorter-term deal, another good clubhouse guy. He's got some pop, better fielder than Pete at first base. Maybe you can justify it. I mean, there is a pathway without Pete Alonso. Now, the Q rating and the fan reaction won't be great, and you better be right. And you're going to have to spend some money. I mean, if you talk about giving Pete $30 million a year, you're going to be giving Bo Bichette, you know, $25, $30 million over just more years. You know, probably you're going to be giving Bregman about $25 million over, you know, 6 or 7 years. And Naylor is going to get, you know, $20 million a year. So you're going to be spending some money in three different positions. And the question is, I mean, where does Jett Williams fit in? Because now if Jett Williams is blocked by a Bichette, Jett Williams is blocked, you know, depending on what Benja does in center field, you know, maybe he becomes more of a trade chip for the Mets. And really, to me, this is what's going to be the most interesting part of the offseason, Pete or no Pete. What does the organization really feel about Jett Williams and Carson Bench? Now, part of that, I don't think Benj gets traded. From what I hear, he's almost untouchable. I'm not so sure about Jett Williams. But I think that that is also playing in the background to what decisions this team is going to make. And Stearns has said it. Young players are always going to be part of the equation. Now, that's not going to be as popular this year as it was in prior years because of what we saw with the development curve of Beatty and Alvarez and how bad Mauricio's been. And the struggles of Vientos in the sophomore slump. Now, that's not reason to give up on young players. You need young players. And with the uncertain CBA, you need them more than ever. But I think that plays in the background. Look, there are other options that you could look at in a non-Pete Alonso world. There's Eugenio Suarez who could come in and provide you that right-handed pop. He's got that raw power. Again, he's a guy that's a streak hitter, you know, hits mistakes. I think he's a guy that resembles a lot of the Pete Alonso that drove us crazy in 2023 and most of 2024. I think he's got some declining metrics, very pull-heavy. I just don't think a streaky hitter who is not a great third baseman, by the way, is the direction I would go at this point. You could also stopgap it if you want to. Paul Goldschmidt is out there. Now, Goldschmidt is a platoon player right now at this point. Really hits lefties well. Not so sure he could hit righties. He's a league average player. You could trade for Yandy Diaz. I think he's a solid contact hitter. Not a great defensive player. Probably more of a DH. Wouldn't be improving your defense. What would it cost? Now, you want to be dynamic. And here's something that doesn't address the right-handedness. Because I don't think they're going to sign Bregman and Bichette. I think that's an option. I think Bregman is more of an option with the Pete Alonso out there. I really do. Whereas Bichette would be in replacement of Alonso, and only if he wanted to play second base. But there is a pathway where Cody Bellinger, and I know what you're going to say, Mike, he's lefty. And there are some red flags. This is a guy that couldn't hit the side of the barn for the Dodgers for a couple of years. Went to Chicago, improved, but he's an elite defender at four positions, three outfield positions, great arm, good range, very good first baseman, had big numbers at Yankee Stadium, but historically he's not a guy that's a Yankee Stadium product. Knowing the uncertainty of Benj, you could stick a Bellinger in center field, wait for Benj to develop. You've got Taylor as your fourth outfielder. You could slide Bellinger over to first if you need in certain situations. And then maybe you go to the Far East. And I know you're rolling your eyes because this is another option. And this is another name that might come into play. Kazuma Okamoto, who's a first baseman, third baseman. He's got some power out, you know, play for the Yomiuri Giants, a popular team, a team that gets a lot of exposure. Look, that's the team that Hideki Matsui was from. He's a 25 homer guy. He's got plate discipline, unlike some of the other big name Japanese players. And I know what you're going to bring up, Murakami. And here's the thing with Murakami. I know that all this power, you know, Babe Ruth or whatever you want to call it, the Barry Bonds of Nippon professional baseball, MPB. But to me, he profiles like Joey Gallo. He's a DH type. Again, he's lefty. Let's keep going into that. Mets need right-handed pop. The Mets need right-handed pop. And right now, that's what Okamoto would give you right-handed pop. And he could play a couple of positions. Could play third base. Could play first base. Seems to be halfway decent at both positions. So you could have a very flexible... Think about this. You could have Bellinger playing a couple of positions, switching around. Okamoto playing a couple of positions, going back and forth. You got Bo Bichette at second base. And look, if something happens to Lindor, you could slide Bichette over. Big downgrade in defense. That's a very flexible, interesting plan B to Alonso. More so than just, just go sign Kyle Schwarber. Go get Murakami. You know, am I saying his name right? Murakami? Let me make sure here. Murakami, right? Murakami. Yeah, go get Murakami. Just get me some power. No, that's not how you do it. It's not how you do it. I really think that'll be an interesting kind of scenario at that point. Look, do I want to see a world without Pete Alonso? I don't. And truthfully, I'd like them to look at a Bregman or a Bo Bichette or a Cody Bellinger, even with Pete in the lineup. I mean, remember, there's a DH spot that the Mets really have not addressed. And if Vientos is not on the club, you know, where are they going to go with that? That's a whole different conversation. Because if they have to trade Vientos, I have a feeling Vientos is possibly going to get another chance at this thing. So gut tells me that power and the way he drove and runs late in the season. And if you could put him lower in the lineup and a deeper lineup, he won't drive you as crazy. I think Vientos is a seven hitter. I think he's a really good seven hitter in a deep lineup because he could really, you know, he profiles his warts of his game profile much better in the seven hole at that bottom part of the lineup. So, I mean, these are some really interesting scenarios. Now, I still believe Pete is the best way to go. He's the safest bet from a whole myriad of situations, from fan marketing, from nostalgia and history. And let's face it, the guys I'm bringing up, none of them are going to hit you 40 home runs and drive in 125 runs. That includes Bo Bichette. And a Kyle Schwarber will do that from the left side, but, you know, he's lefty and he's pitchable in big spots. Kyle Tucker's, I just don't see him as being an option. I keep saying that. I'm not going to get too deep into that. You know, maybe you trade a McNeil then, you know, for another piece that you need. The other thing is, before you throw McNeil to the Wolves, knowing that you need a stopgap in center field, maybe Taylor and McNeil in center field are a decent stopgap for bench. I mean, that is really the crux of all of this. And remember, the Mets need, you know, some solid right-handed bats. I don't think you guys realize, we don't talk about it often, the Mets hit under 700 as a team against left-handed pitching. I mean, Nimmo, Soto, Lindor, they're three big bats. They are left-handed hitters. Lindor historically has done well against lefties hitting right-handed. He didn't last year. I mean, is Alvarez going to be that guy that could start clobbering lefties consistently as a catcher? He's probably going to get a couple of days off a week. We know the injury history. We don't know what we're going to get out of Vientos. Beatty is becoming better, but we don't know. So really, at the end, I think the decision that Stearns has to make, along with this whole Pete Alonso thing, is who does he want to keep out of these kids that there's duplicates of? Vientos, Mauricio, Beatty. You know, what's McNeil look like? And then the question is, if Pete's going in another direction, 6 or 7 years, I think the most impactful free agent bat that you could import that's not going to, I mean, it may block Jet Williams, and that's really the key. It may block Jet Williams, and that's where they have to have that honest dialogue. But maybe that's where you just use Jet Williams as a trade piece, is you go after a Bo Bichette. And I wasn't talking about this guy 3 weeks ago, but the more I saw him play in the postseason and then I started to think about it and did some research, it makes a little bit of sense. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, life without Edwin Diaz. There was at least a glimmer of hope here with life without Pete Alonso. Without Edwin Diaz, that's a lot trickier. Back with more right after this.
I look at the closers market. My goodness, it is a nightmare. Do you want Devin Williams closing games for the New York Mets after what I had to sit through watching Devin Williams for 162 games with the New York Yankees? So both players are needed for the Mets to me to have success in 26 and be a big time baseball team. But you can carve a path, shockingly, without Pete. What is the ninth inning without Edwin Diaz? Who's the guy?
All right, we're back. Let's talk about the bullpen. Let's talk about Edwin Diaz and life without Edwin Diaz. Pat Ragazzo of SI is going to be joining us in just a couple of minutes. But I don't see a scenario where these two sides don't come to some agreement. It just makes too much sense. The skeleton of what Diaz's value was already there in the contract that he opted out on. He had a couple of years at $18.5 million. The Mets had a team option for $20. I mean, probably Diaz wants a fourth year. Really, 4 years between $70 and $80 million is his value. The Mets already had almost half of that they were on the hook for if Diaz opted in. So the only reason for Diaz not to be back with the Mets is if A, somebody blows him away with a crazy offer, B, Diaz doesn't want to be here, or C, the Mets don't want him. The Mets don't want to invest in him. But you start to look at the options, especially if you go to the next quote-unquote Beck's closer on the market, Robert Suarez, who's probably going to be looking for a similar deal to the 3 or 4 years at almost, you know, 18 to 20 per that a Tanner Scott and that a Diaz has. And if you're going to start playing and swimming in that, you know, area, well, go for the best. I mean, there's really nothing left else to say at that point. Yeah, there's a risk, and obviously, as soon as Diaz loses his fastball, the bite on his slider and the command goes away, he's a bad pitcher. We've seen some small ticks down in velocity, but I think he's become a better pitcher, like I said, than ever before. He's able to navigate when he doesn't have his best stuff. He's comfortable in his skin. He's comfortable in New York. He's been in a number of big games. So when you have a tried-and-true tested New York closer, for a team that's had so many issues over the years, even with the elite closers they've had who have struggled and caused so much heartbreak, Johnny Franco, Billy Wagner, Jurys Familia, on and on and on and on, when you have a guy like Diaz, you don't just let him go. Now, What I wanted to see and what I would like to see, and I'll reiterate it, is the Mets sign Diaz. They find somebody who could be a second closer, whether that be a Kyle Finnegan, a breakout reliever, or bring in a Rosell Iglesias or a Kenley Jansen. Jansen's a bit of a declining option. Somebody that is willing to take a second banana seat to Diaz and not get the accolades, but close, similar to what David Robertson was looking to do when he was signed before Diaz got hurt. I think that they could bring in another lefty. I think they might go the value route on that. They have Brooks Raley already. They brought back Castillo this week. I'd like to see them re-sign Rogers as the seventh inning reliever. Change of pace. I like his delivery. It gives them another look. His command, the weak contact. I really like that. So that's what I would like to see. Now, if Diaz goes, all bets are off, because you're not going to be signing a second closer at this point. You're going to be finding who your closer is. And really, when you look at guys like Robert Suarez, Peter Fairbanks, some of the bigger names of the market, they all have secondary metrics, especially with maybe contact or, the case of Fairbanks going from a small market to New York City, history of command and control, history of injuries. I mean, Suarez, to me, the biggest concern I have is that there's a lot of hard hit contact on his analytics, if you go to Baseball Savant. I mean, can he work on his repertoire? His changeup was hittable this past year. I mean, are there things there at his age? He's in his mid-30s, spent a lot of time in Japan. I mean, both of these guys, Fairbanks and Suarez, are going from smaller markets. Yes, Suarez pitched for the Padres and was pitching in some big spots, but they'll be going and replacing a popular closer in a hotbed of a baseball market, a team expected to win, a demanding fan base, and you go out there in April and blow two or three games, and Diaz is somewhere in L.A. or, who knows, blowing people away like always, that's going to be hard for whoever replaces him. And then you go down the line and you look at a Kyle Finnegan, a guy that closed some ball games in D.C., went to Detroit, seemed to find himself, a guy that probably could use the Mets pitching lab to work on his stuff and his sequencing. It's a guy that is really tough, but if he falls behind and loses his command, he's very hittable. I think when he's down behind in the count 2-0, I think they hit like 350 against them, the offense. So, he's a fastball-heavy guy. Can he use his slider more? He's good against lefties. I mean, really, if you lose out on Diaz, the best option is to sign Rosell Iglesias. He's a guy who stays healthy, has a resume, has closed big games for the Braves. He did struggle in the first half. There was some talk about him tipping pitches, but his whip was well under one in the second half. His underlying metrics are solid, unlike Suarez and Fairbanks, who have some red flags in there. I mean, where else are you going to go? Emilio Pagan, Ryan Helsley? I mean, Helsley, they hit over 400, 422 against his fastball. I don't think his issues were just tipping pitches. I think there's something more there. I mean, he is the most hittable. Helsley might be the most hittable 100-mile-an-hour fastball guy I have ever seen. I watched him behind the plate when his first outing, when he first came over. And I was like, wow, how does anybody hit this? He throws harder than Diaz. It's the lightest fastball, straightest fastball out there. I mean, it's the slider that is the pitch. But if you don't get ahead of anybody, it doesn't matter. I don't think you could bring Helsley back even on a one-year deal to close after what happened last year. Pagan, I think, is more of a second closer. He might be a good option to bring in to back up Diaz more so than not, making him replace Diaz. He's a lower-end closer, had a good year in Cincinnati. His underlying metrics aren't bad. I mean, another wild option is to put Clay Holmes back in the closer role and sign a couple of starters. I don't think they would do a bullpen by committee and go into July and try to figure it out. I think that would be the worst case scenario. I know that stuff that Stearns has talked about, the bullpen being fungible. So there's some options and there's some ways to go around it. But unlike the Alonso scenario, where I laid out some interesting plan Bs that improve the defense, still continue to give you an offense that probably could score 5 runs a game, and in some ways might be a little bit more of an offense that puts pressure on you with aggressive hitters that aren't just, home run or walk or, three true outcome guys. I mean, really try to, put an offense that'll put pressure on you consistently. When you talk about a bullpen without Diaz, it's like taking Michael Jordan away from, the 86 Bulls, who were not a good team without him. You go from being okay, because there's improvements the bullpen needs with Diaz, to being pretty bad. And in 2026, in modern baseball, you can't win Bupkis without a bullpen. There's no way. Your starters are, best case scenario, even if the Mets sign a couple of big-time pitchers, they're only going to go 6 or 7 innings. You're going to have to get 6 to 9 outs minimum in best case scenario night. So guess what? You need at least 3 of those outs to be a high-level guarantee of success, and that's what comes with Diaz. Now, you telling me that Diaz walks is Iglesias, maybe bringing back Rodgers, maybe bringing in a Finnegan, does that mitigate it? It's not bad. And Iglesias is not bad. I mean, a short-term deal of Iglesias gives you a couple of years to figure out, can you develop your closer? But you have a guy who's popular, who's marketed, who's elite, arguably the best pitcher in the game when it comes to closing ball games. He's figured out New York. He's been through the gauntlet a couple of times. He's one of the most fascinating New York stories an athlete has had in these parts. He's a guy that nearly got run out of town before he even made it through his first year. He's a guy that nearly was traded a couple of times early on. You know, his 2022 season was an historic bullpen campaign, the likes of which we may never see again in our lifetime. And when you start to think about it, he just makes too much sense. Yes, is he a bigger risk in a vacuum than Alonso because of his repertoire? Because if one thing goes wrong, especially with his mechanics and with his delivery, and if he gets hurt, he can't really provide any other kind of craftiness to his game where he'll be able to say, hey, I'll figure this out. I don't think he's that kind of pitcher. You know that. I know that. But I think it's a risk you have to take. And at this point, a wealthy team, a team that, like I said, is, and I've said it before, they, by reports, they invest 90% of their revenue into payroll. They should have a casino coming on the way. They've come on off a bad season. They really can't afford, after a historic increase in attendance and fan interest, to take the opposite approach and really, you know, not go all in responsibly, of course. I think letting Diaz walk, if they let Diaz walk, it's all on the Mets. I just can't see. It's not like someone's going to give him a 7-year deal. It's not like, I mean, you know, will somebody care about the draft pick? Okay, maybe the Dodgers don't care about the draft pick. Maybe the Yankees don't care about the draft pick. Maybe the Red Sox don't care about the draft pick. I'm not so sure. Maybe. But, I mean, are they going to give him more than a 4-year contract for $80 million? Will they throw him a 5th year? Maybe that's the difference. Maybe he gets that. Does he get it without deferrals? I guess for me, and I'll say this with Pete, and I'll say this with Diaz, if the contracts are within market value and reasonable market value and not a stupid overpay, I can't see them not being back. Now, stupid overpays, does that mean they go all out and re-sign them for any amount of money? No, you can't do that. I just don't see that happening. Not right now in this current MLB, not with the uncertainty of the CBA, not with the case of Diaz, a draft pick attached. If anybody's going to get an overpaying stupid money contract that you're probably going to go, yuck, it'd be Pete, it wouldn't be Diaz. So I just think we're wasting our time with a plan B with Diaz. But you have to go through it. And look, there are some names on this list. If you told me, perfect scenario for me, bring back Rodgers. You got Raley as your lefty. Maybe you go and try to find a value lefty as well because you got Minter coming back. You bring in Rozell Iglesias as your second closer. Rodgers, Rozell Iglesias, Diaz, Raley, Minter as the 5th guy. You work in a couple of the young pitchers. Maybe you have some kind of off-season veteran, a Kenley Jansen who doesn't have a contract. Maybe you could bring him on, or a Pagan who maybe doesn't get a deal he wants, sign him to a 1-year value deal. And, away you go. You know, do you think about if Helsley's out there and he's not getting anything, does he want to come back for a year and work with the Mets pitching lab? That'd be an interesting concept. I'd only do that with Diaz in the fold. They wouldn't do that without Diaz. He could be maybe the second closer. Maybe you go that route. That's a possibility. I think it's tough for Helsley to come back. There's so much bad will with the fans that if he is done and they do sign him and he does blow games, it's going to be hard to see him survive here. I mean, look, they didn't trust him at all down the stretch. That should tell you a lot. They didn't trust him at all down the stretch. Tyler Rogers took most of his big spots there. So anyway, so that's the deal with Diaz. That's plan B with Diaz. What does Pat Ragazzo think? Pat's got his ear out there. He's got his ear to get the pulse of the team. What does Pat think? We'll talk about Diaz. We'll talk about Pete. We'll get some predictions from Pat about the offseason. Are there rotation arms that the Mets are looking at? Does he think they could get Tarek Skubal if he becomes available? We'll talk about that and more right after this. We're back, and joining us, our good friend from Sports Illustrated, Pat Ragazzo. And Pat is one of the guys clued in throughout the season with the Mets. Pat, welcome to the program. I think it's going to be an interesting offseason compared to the first two of David Stearns. I think Mets fans are curious where it's going to go. And I think there's going to be some twists and turns and some agita as well. I don't think we're going to know exactly what's going on, especially when it comes to Edwin Diaz and Pete Alonso.
Yeah, well, first off, thanks for having me back on, Mike. It's always a pleasure to come on with you and chop it up. And yeah, this is going to be a really crucial offseason for the New York Mets after missing out on the playoffs in 2025. They have Pete Alonso as a free agent, Edwin Diaz, who's surely to reject the qualifying offer and become a free agent. And they need to also make improvements. So we're going to see, are they going to be able to retain their own stars? And who else are they going to add? Because pitching and defense are the two areas where they really struggled in last year and they really need to improve in. And they're going to have to find ways to upgrade those areas this offseason. And is that letting go of Pete Alonso and bringing back Edwin Diaz, or bringing in a frontline starter and letting Diaz and Alonso go? Like, that, it just all remains to be seen. But this is a very pivotal offseason for David Stearns.
The Mets, according to reports, spend about 90% of their revenue towards payroll. So we know they're going to invest in payroll. I don't think the decision on Diaz or Alonso is part of a, hey, we don't want to spend money or we want to keep the payroll down. I think they're in a vacuum. The problem is they're complicated, but they're not. The Mets don't hit left-handed pitching. Pete is like a top three right-handed batter. I mean, if you go back to when he debuted, he's not Aaron Judge, but he's on that list of the top five right-handed batters for all the warts he has. Diaz is a guy I know that tomorrow that fastball goes away, he's a bad pitcher. We know that. The hope is over the next 3 or 4 years it won't. So in a vacuum, both of them are risky. Aging right-handed bat, two-pitch closer, expensive. Both are so tied to the Mets. They're tied to the fabric of the team, the fan connection, the dynamic of how the team changes, and the risk of not bringing them back, and the risk of whether the plan B goes wrong could go really bad for a president of baseball operations that isn't popular now. I know he's not thinking like that, but look, the owner of the team has to think about that a little bit. I just find it hard to believe, short of somebody blowing these guys away or them not wanting to be here, that they can't come to an accord with these two guys. They almost have to.
Yeah, they almost do have to keep both of them. And I wrote in my story yesterday that the expectation right now, at least, is that the Mets are going to wind up letting Alonso walk unless he comes back for a team-friendly deal. And that kind of seems like the realistic path, but I'm not in agreement with that method. I think that they got to do what they can to bring him back, because he is one of the best right-handed batters in all of baseball. And if you lose Pete Alonso, you're losing a lot of protection for Juan Soto and a huge bat in your lineup.
A team-friendly deal, that's an interesting concept, because that can mean a lot of things. I thought what he did last year was a team-friendly deal. Now, let's say you give him Freddie Freeman money. Freddie Freeman's making about $27 million a year. Nobody would debate that Freddie Freeman is a better first baseman, a better player than Pete Alonso. Is it in your opinion, or what you're hearing, is it the year? So to me, I think a value contract for Pete is 4 or 5 years, $120 to $150 million. Maybe at or just below $30 million AAV. Something that's an overpay, something because of his prolific power and the fact that he had maybe a turnaround season. Maybe he's looking for more like, you know, a 7-year deal. I don't know if it's out there. What is a team-friendly deal? Because to me, a 4-year deal at about 27 to 30 AAV, pretty reasonable, pretty team-friendly, but maybe you're talking about something where they're looking at shorter term. If that's the case, then you're basically saying, I don't want you at that point.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's the case after the year he put up last year and just everything that he means to the franchise, all-time leader in home runs. I think more so what you were saying, where you know, a team-friendly deal would be about 4 years, maybe $30 million AAV, you know, something like that. But, you know, Pete has the right to go out there and look for something better than that, especially after the year he just had 38 home runs, 126 RBIs. He even batted 272, which is a career high. 871 OPS, 141 WRC plus. Like, he had an elite season, and it helped Juan Soto have an elite season as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Pete is going to go out there. He's going to be 31 in December, and he's going to try and, you know, get that, see what he's worth on the open market, and see, you know, can he get a deal in 6, 7, maybe even 8 years? Who knows? You know, he's going to be looking for, you know, the length of that contract. And that's something that we're going to find out, how comfortable the Mets are going, you know, the amount of years that they're willing to, that they'd be willing to dish out to Alonso, you know, given how much he means to the franchise. But yeah, I think more so a team friendly deal would be about a 4-year contract, you know, worth $30 million a year.
I mean, look, if someone gives him a 7-year deal, the Red Sox come in and say, hey, come play for us and play pinball off the big green monster, I guess the Mets would have to walk away. And look, there is pathways to having a competitive team, albeit marketing and the fan Q rating probably would take a hit without Pete. Now, Diaz is different because in a way he's a riskier contract. Over the next 4 years, I still don't think Pete Alonso will age that badly in 4 years. 7, sure, and maybe he'll be a DH at some points. That's not the end of the world at that point. It's not a 10-year deal. It's not an 11-year deal you're handing Pete Alonso like the Cardinals did when, well, the Angels did when Pujols left over a decade ago. Now, Diaz is a closer. That could end tomorrow. He could get hurt. He already has. The fastball's declined a little bit. But to me, he's so much the fabric of this team. And when you look at the arms in all of baseball, if you need 3 outs and you're just going by stuff, and you need 3 outs, fresh arm, starter, reliever, whoever. I mean, who else would you want in the ninth inning? And already with the deal that he opted out with, the structure is in place. He was only guaranteed about another $38 million if he opted in the last 2 years. He wasn't guaranteed the last year because the Mets had that option. Really, to me, the structure is there. It's about whether you want to give him a fourth year, want to defer some money, or, you know, do add a couple million dollars to it. I mean, I can't wait. I mean, are the Dodgers going to give him $25 million a year? I mean, they're going to defer him until, you know, the year 3000. I mean, what? I mean, really, what can he get? And he's got a draft pick attached to him with the qualifying offer. So to me, this is, I think Diaz is procedural. I just don't see him going anywhere. I heard the Yankees. I heard the Padres. I've seen the Dodgers. I've seen people say the Dodgers are the favorite. I just don't understand the logic behind a guy with a draft pick who is comfortable here, who has a history of having to be comfortable to be successful. Let's call it like we see it. You know him better than me. I think you've been in the clubhouse over there.
Yeah, definitely. He's definitely comfortable, loves being a Met. And, you know, he, unlike Pete Alonso, had to think about and think it over and talk with his family about whether he was going to opt out of his contract or not. He didn't give that answer on the final day of the season like Alonso did almost immediately. Edwin Diaz, he fits with only a few teams, and he does have the qualifying offer attached to them, which is going to hurt his market. So I don't see a world where the Mets let him go. They almost have to bring him back because they don't have a plan B. Like, they don't have who are they going to place in the ninth inning, and who are they comfortable placing in the ninth inning if they let go of Edwin Diaz. They don't have anybody. And, you know, they would have to spend money on Robert Suarez if they wind up losing Diaz. I don't think they want to do that. I think they'd rather just keep Diaz.
A lot of concerning underlying metrics there. A lot of hard hit. Yeah. Every pitcher, Peter Fairbanks, Robert Suarez. I mean, actually, Raisel Iglesias, who's a veteran, is probably the best arm outside of Diaz. He had a tricky year last year. I mean, maybe you go short term. You have, I mean, I don't think people realize how the ninth inning becomes much sweatier without this guy, even if you bring in one of these names that are out in the free agent market. I don't care what the numbers say on Baseball Reference.
And I think that's why Diaz ultimately opted out. I think he knows that good and well, and his representation knows that he's the Mets' best option. And what are they going to do other than pay him more, give him an extra year, you know, and bring him back? And I don't think the Dodgers are going to play a factor. I mean, we just saw them give big money to Tanner Scott last year, and that blew up in their face. Right. So I don't think that they're going to do that again with Edwin Diaz. I think they're kind of spooked in that giving top dollar to a reliever. And that's another reason why Diaz's market won't be as robust as maybe some people think, is because, you know, it is very, very risky to give big money to a reliever because they're just so volatile from year to year.
Let's play some what if, or maybe what you have information with. So let's say the Mets find an accord with Alonso. How do they improve this defense without ripping apart any kind of progress they made offensively? I've heard Beatty at second base maybe go after Bregman. They have, you know, Murakami's a name in the Far East. There's another one, Akimoto, a first baseman, third baseman, contact hitter. You brought up on your site Kyle Schwarber. Give me a Pete Alonso offense. What do you think some of the names that go with a re-signing of Pete Alonso? Because they're not going to go and splurge on everybody. Let's start with a Pete Alonso returning offense. What does that look like in terms of improvements in your eyes or what
Yeah.
you're hearing?
Well, yeah, I think that Cody Bellinger is someone who fits, especially if Alonso doesn't come back. But if he does come back, he still does fit in center field or left field. Maybe you could DH Nimmo some more. You could DH Pete some more, which I think that's what they want to do if they bring him back and you play Bellinger at first. I think that if you're gonna have a star-studded lineup and add, instead of subtract by bringing back Pete, then a Cody Bellinger is probably someone who fits. Schwarber is like a dream world for offense, at least not for improving their defense, which is what they want to focus on. But Schwarber, MVP candidate, and he had a monstrous year for the Phillies, and but it probably wouldn't make sense with given Pete's going to be a DH long term, Soto's probably going to be a DH long term. You have three DHs on the roster plus an aging Lindor, an aging Nimmo. It just probably wouldn't make sense. So I think Bellinger is someone that we should keep an eye on, based off what I've heard. Keep an eye on the Mets being heavily involved in Bellinger's market.
Even with a Pete Alonso, you think? Because I think he makes a ton of sense without Pete, because then he gives you the versatility where Carson Bench could then get some time in the minors. You could
Yeah.
play Bellinger in center field potentially, maybe slide him over to first base when Bench gets called up. Stopgap first base, maybe in some ways, Paul Goldschmidt, maybe something like that. Or do you see Bellinger more of a non-Pete Alonso option for the Mets? And who knows what the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees, do they want to lose a free agent to the Mets 2 seasons in a row? Not to the level of Soto, of course, but
Yeah.
not something. I mean, a guy that's his father played for the Yankees, was really good at Yankee Stadium. I've turned the corner. I didn't like Bellinger for many, many years. I mean, he could at the side of a barn for a while, but he's really turned into a nice, a player that maybe not pops out off the stat line, but does so many things well. And he's a decent hitter for sure.
Yeah, no, he is. He's a very solid major leaguer, and more than solid the last couple of years, with the Cubs and with the Yankees. And I think Bellinger's more realistic for the Mets if Alonso walks. But what I would do would be bring in both of them, bring back Alonso and bring in Bellinger. But it's probably more realistic that Bellinger is the Pete Alonso replacement.
So Pete walks, the name that I've started to look at, and there's no connection to the Mets, and he doesn't even play a position that the Mets have a need for, but maybe he switches over to second, is Bo Bichette. What do
Yeah.
you think about Bo? Now he's 27 years old, probably going to require a 7 or 8 year deal, Carlos Correa type deal. Think about Correa was willing to move off a short to play third. Bichette's not a good shortstop like Correa was. Guy that's more of an aggressive hitter, average hitter with pop. Good lineage with the father. Curious if Bo Bichette, how serious would it be to get in on Bo Bichette, move him to second in an Alonso-less world?
I think he definitely fits at second base, but it's also going to involve potentially trading McNeil, which I heard they're expected to float him on the trade market, which is something they've done in the past as well. But yeah, I think Bichette's a realistic option for the Mets, especially if they lose Alonso, then they're going to need to replace his offense. And Bichette, is younger and more athletic, and plays a middle infield spot, and that is still an area of need. The only thing is it would potentially block Jett Williams in the future, which Jett Williams is probably more likely to play second base for the Mets as opposed to center field when you got Bench coming up too. Unless they trade one of them this offseason for a Scooble or someone like that. Yeah, I'd say it's realistic, but it would potentially block Jett Williams.
What will be interesting is there's a lot of duplication on the roster with Mauricio, Beatty, and Vientos, and each one of them does something well. I don't think people realize how good Mauricio is as a third baseman. Look at some of his advanced metrics. He's a great fielding third baseman. If he could figure out the bat, he'd be an interesting piece. Beatty made strides at the end of the year. I think it killed him not having him that last series in Miami. We
Yeah.
hear a lot about Jett Williams and Carson Bench. From all reports, Bench is probably untouchable. I'm not so sure about Jett Williams. Do you see an offseason where they, maybe they re-sign a Pete, they get back Diaz, and then, outside of going in on some arms on the free agent market or maybe getting involved in a big fish like Scooble, do they go at trying to see which one of these kids can take the next step. I know that's not popular. That's very anti-New York. They will be murdered for that.
Yeah.
But it would be something in another market that nobody would blink at and actually would be applauded for if they weren't in New York.
Yeah, I think they should. I think they should leave, you know, not get a long-term option in center field and leave it open for, you know, Bench to potentially take that job and you know, possibly at second base as well with Jett Williams. I think that they should give the kids a chance. They're probably not going to give them a chance right out of spring training, but I think at some point during the season that they'll have stopgap options, maybe playing those positions, and we'll see those guys sooner rather than later.
Sometimes when you look at how close the Blue Jays were to winning and the margin of error of how the Dodgers won, the things that happened that you can't trade for in the offseason, you can't predict because it's baseball, right? You wonder if we overstate trying to stack the deck in a sport that probabilistically you're going to lose. Like, all the odds are, I think it was Billy Epler that said you have like a 90% chance of losing, even if you have like the best team out there.
Yeah.
There is, and it's, again, this is the part that'd be interesting. If they took a step back and allowed the kids like Williams and Benj, and they did go out and buy some pitching, I'm not saying they won't do anything, I think that wouldn't be popular, but it would be bold. And I think I could see David Stearns not giving a rat's you know what about what the fans and the media say. I don't think it's the highest probability of happening, but I don't think it's a 0% chance. And I think it's a greater chance than we think. It's just a gut thing. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a risk, definitely, but I would like them to keep those options open for those guys. Maybe, you know, bring in a couple stopgap options in center field, second base, and then wind up giving those guys, you know, an opportunity, you know, sooner rather than later during the season. But yeah, it's going to be hard to justify that, you know, without upgrading the pitching and defense, you know, which is something David Stearns talked about in his press conference in the end of the season about, you know, improving run prevention. And that's something he harped on, you know, in a number of times. And that's something, an area where they're going to have to really improve in the offseason.
So we talk about Diaz, Robert Suarez, Peter Fairbanks, Kyle Finnegan, Emilio Pagan. These are downgrades. Suarez had a good year. So look at those advanced analytics. Same thing with Fairbanks. A lot of hard hit rate. Both of them are really good pitchers. Suarez is a lot older. I like Rozel Iglesias. He's older. Maybe had some issues tipping. Had a big second half. Looked like himself. Kyle Finnegan's interesting because he went to Detroit, and he's a guy that Mets fans are familiar with. A guy that gets in trouble when he falls behind and has to throw his fastball. But maybe he's a breakout candidate. Where does Pat Regazzo go if Diaz is gone? Which closer, which direction do they go? Because unless you know of somebody ready to bust out in the system, which I don't, they're going to have to import one of these names or somebody I'm not thinking about.
Yeah, they really don't have anyone in their system who could step up and replace an Edwin Diaz or, you know, fill a major role in the bullpen right now. But you know, at least someone you can't count on that going into the season. But I would probably go after Suarez. I mean, I still think Suarez is the second best closer available on the market next to Diaz. And you know, if you're going to lose the best closer on the market and arguably one of the best closers in the league, then you got to replace him with someone like a Suarez. So I think that that's the route that they should go if they wind up losing him.
Starting pitching. So here's how I look at the starting pitching. I think it's the Scooble conversation is fun. We don't know if he's going to get traded. I will tell you it's going to be expensive. I think the Mets have the pieces to get it done. But if they don't get a window like they did with Santana 2 decades ago, there's no way I could just say give up, you know, Jett Williams and Jonah Tong and maybe Brett Beatty and maybe another prospect for 1 year in a CBA uncertain future of Scooble, not in a tournament sport. Realistically, I think there's going to be guys like George Kirby or Joe Ryan, guys that might be able to make the next jump, and the Mets pitching lab might be able to help them. I like a direction there to go. I like Dylan Cease because now he's only going to cost money, not prospects. He's an inconsistent guy. Maybe you could get him like Blake Snell when he went to San Francisco on a shorter-term deal. Framber Valdez is interesting, but what always bothers me is his best pitch is his most hittable pitch, the pitch he throws the most of. Had those issues with the clubhouse and the catcher last year.
Yeah.
What would you like to see on the arm side? Because let's say they don't go sexy on the offensive side like we talked about. Let's say they just, you know, Pete, and they try to plug it with some value and some kids. What kind of arms could maybe make up for what the biggest deficit was last year, which was starting pitching?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the free agent market's not that strong. Dylan Cease, I believe, has the qualifying offer attached to him too, which isn't that's somewhere where the Mets probably would stay away from. But maybe a Zach Gallen could be someone who fits with the Mets. I mean, he's a lefty, he's an innings eater. He's been, you know, he's had some elite seasons. Last year was not one of them, but he's still, you know, semi-young. I think that, you know, if you're not going to trade assets away for a Scooble, you know, and only getting 1 year of him right before a potential lockout next year, I think that, you know, going in the route of a Gallen or maybe even a Framber Valdez are the ways to go, where it's only going to cost money and you're going to get a top of the rotation starter, which is something they've been lacking for quite some time now. So, I think that, it's not necessarily the best options available unless they pursue a trade, but that's probably like the instant fix that they're going to be able to that they're going to have to pursue this offseason in order to upgrade the rotation.
What do you think's next here for the Mets? Like, what do you got coming up? And I guess give us the Pat Regazzo prediction. Give me some predictions of what you expect to see over the coming weeks as we head into the Thanksgiving holiday. And then, of course, the winter meetings will be here before you know it.
Well, sure. We got the GM meetings coming up. So, I mean, those are always kind of uneventful. That's why I don't go to them anymore. But because it's kind of a little too early for things to start happening. I will be at the winter meetings in Orlando in a month from now, which I'm excited about. And my predictions, I think the Mets re-sign. I think Diaz rejects the qualifying offer. I think everybody knows that's going to happen. But I think the Mets re-sign him. I think they sign Bellinger. And I think they get a top of the rotation starter. I don't know who it's going to be, but I think that those are the musts. And I think they wind up trading McNeil this offseason and letting Alonso walk. I think Alonso's going to get paid handsomely, you know, elsewhere. And I think he's going to get more years than the Mets are comfortable going and David Stearns is comfortable going.
I don't know if Scooble get traded. Something tells me the Mets aren't going to get Scooble. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, they're probably not going to get Scooble.
I just think it's too expensive, too risky. I don't think Skeens is going to be on the market. And quite honestly, I don't know if a Contra will get traded. So I think the Mets are going to have to go through that pool. And I think you're right. I think they're either going to have to sign a starter, an innings guy, Zach Gallen's one of those names.
Yeah.
Or they're going to have to say who's available and who's becoming expensive. Look, Seattle's got a ton of expensive young arms that may have to get shed. And they may have to find their version of what the Astros did with Gerrit Cole. Maybe that's the way they go. And I know that's going to drive the fans nuts. It'll be, hey, Pat, listen, this has been great. Your Twitter feed will blow up because now you're saying that Pete's not going to come back. So now they're either going to yell at you or love you. So that's what the fun of this is. So thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it. Let's do this again. And looking forward to seeing you at the winter meetings and talking again this offseason. All righty?
Yeah, of course, Mike. Thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure coming on.
That's Pat Regazzo. Love him at Sports Illustrated. Check out Pat on Twitter, at Regazzo Report, the Mets report on the side. Also, you can check him out on Frank the Tank's podcast there over at Barstool. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, some mailbag and wrap up. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. Let's do some mailbag here and maybe grab a couple of things from the chat room. I didn't do it last week, but I had some interesting commentary. Let's start off with Jason. Jason is upset because he writes, "Isn't it risky in an all-in year and the questions surrounding the pitching to hire a rookie coach? I would have liked someone with experience. This year is too important to take risks like this. Mendoza's job is on the line." That's the first part of his question, and it's about Justin Willard. And look, here's the deal. I said this last week. Jason, it's hard for me to really comment on the coaches because the way that I grew up, and maybe the way you grew up, where coaches came into an organization, put their stamp on the organization, cooked with a chef and got the ingredients and cooked, like what old Bill Parcells said back in the day, that doesn't happen anymore. The Mets have an organizational philosophy on hitting. They have an organizational philosophy on pitching. And they don't care who the name is and their experience. They care about their experience, but in terms of their big league resume, whether they were a big league pitcher, have a lot of experience at the big league level, they like the skill sets and the way that they can teach the philosophies on both sides of the ball. And I think that that's the way they're going to go. And if it works, it'll be a new market inefficiency and other teams will do it. And if it doesn't, they'll get criticized. But let's face it, with the way that the game is going, with the amount of work that a coach has in terms of, you know, not during the game, the 3 or 4 hours during the game, but before the game, it's a lot. And some of the old-time coaches are not used to that. A lot of the data and the way to interpret the data is out of their reach. You know, there's a value, I think, to former ball players being on the roster and providing, you know, emotional support and getting players through difficult times and maybe, you know, passing on baseball lore to them. But at this point in time, the game is technical, and they feel that the best type of coaching a player could get is through video and through with hitting, body movement, and launch angle, and with pitching, it's about repertoire and sequencing and shaping and a lot of stuff that is, you know, a lot of science. And I think that, you know, that's out of the reach of a lot of the old school coaches. So although I agree with your premise, I don't think that that's where the sport is going now. I know that Jason's also upset about the Mets claiming Bay from the Pirates because he has a history of domestic violence. And if you're not familiar, Jiwon Bae, he's a backup outfielder the Mets acquired from the Pirates. He's got a little bit of speed, maybe. I have to look at his defensive metrics. I don't have a lot out of him. He doesn't hit the hell of a lot out of the ball. A couple of things about players being claimed, whether it's Castillo, the lefty, or Bae here. The roster in the offseason is as fluid as the regular season. As players become available and as 40-man spots are available, if there's a player that can fit a need, a team will acquire them and they'll pick them up. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, they'll get rid of them. They'll designate them for assignment. We've seen the Mets do this even before David Stearns was the GM. So just because somebody was claimed now, and I understand the concern about the off-the-field stuff, here's all I'll say. On a team owned by Alex Cohen, who is just as much involved with the culture of the Mets as her husband, Steve, I don't think they would acquire somebody who wasn't properly vetted. And somebody like that, it wasn't like, you know, Jared Porter, where it was a background thing that nobody would have known about. This is in the public, what happened with Bae and his girlfriend. So, and then, you know, Jason seems to believe that the media is preparing us for Alonso leaving. The tea leaves point to it. Look, Jason, I can't argue with you on that. I still think Pete leaving where he's grown up, if the deal is a fair deal, if it's a market value deal, not an over stupid pay deal, unless the media knows that the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Dodgers, I don't see how they'd fit with the Dodgers, but or a team of that we're not even thinking about the Giants, the Padres, whatever, are willing to go and give Pete a 6 or 7 year deal, go, you know, $200 million or more north, which I think is risky. And, you know, I don't think it's out of the equation for a team to do that. But I think Pete's sweet spot is 4 years, about $30 million AAV, 4 years, $120 million, maybe a fifth year team option or some kind of trigger on that fifth year. Maybe you go that route. Other than that, if Pete is in, if everybody's in that bandwidth and Pete turns it down and decides to go elsewhere, or the Mets don't even go and offer that level of a team-friendly deal, like we talked about with Pat Ragazzo, is something way below market, like a 3-year deal, then they don't want him, and they're basically telling you they don't want him at this point. James Schwartz, James Schwartz, apologize, James, was over on the Beyond the Mic on the premium content over at the newsletter, was questioning about me saying I wouldn't trade Vientos, and I was talking about that. And what I really mean when I say about trading the young players, James, and I apologize for saying your last name wrong. Maybe I was thinking about Spaceballs there for a minute. That might be a movie that I'm dating myself on. I just don't want to give away a Vientos. I just don't want to give away a Mauricio. I don't want to give prospects away. I want to get some stuff in, of value. Now, an interesting deal that's been thrown out there is that the Mets are looking at Luis Robert Jr. again from the White Sox, and I heard maybe Mauricio is a name that could be going back to Chicago. Now, you'd be giving up a talented prospect, a toolsy prospect, that I have questions will ever pan out for somebody who you might only have for a year, who may be a very good stopgap, who may be a lottery ticket. All of a sudden, he figures it out offensively and puts it together. He's got a great glove. You know, he's lefty, so it doesn't really solve the right-handed bat situation that I've been preaching about this whole show, but that's kind of like a good deal. Like, I could live with a deal like that. If you're just going to get rid of Vientos, you're just going to get rid of a player for the sake of it, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't allow a team to come in and say, well, I want Beatty, I want Vientos. I wouldn't just have a quantity of these prospects going the other way because you don't think they're that good. You know, Vientos to me is a guy that in a lengthy lineup as a DH in the bottom third of the order, like number seven, I think could be a really good piece. I think he was put in a higher up in the batting order, protection for Pete at some point, or maybe even looked at to be maybe a cleanup hitter after what he did in the postseason in 2024. Maybe he's not that hitter. Maybe he's not that type of hitter. So, excuse me, Lewis Robert Jr. is a righty batter. I don't know where I got lefty. He's a righty batter. That's my mistake, so I apologize. So he would address the righty bat situation. It's been a while since he actually had a above league average season, but he did hit, had an 842 OPS against lefties last year. I apologize. That was on my front. So, that's really my point about trading Vientos. I wouldn't just give him away. You know, that's kind of my feeling on that. All right. What else do we have here? Adam brought up about, let's see, I'm going to go through this. Oh, Adam. So Adam wants to know about Drew Smith being designated, not offered a tender to contract. He had a couple million dollar option, and, if he's healthy, why would the Mets do that? And I had actually advocated a week ago when I talked about the roster, about picking up Raley's option and Drew Smith. And my guess is this. We don't know if Drew Smith is healthy. Maybe Drew Smith is healthy, but maybe Drew Smith isn't showing the progress or necessarily giving the Mets a feeling that he's any better than the version that they had prior to the Tommy John surgery. And maybe they want to look at other options out there instead of pigeonholing themselves into a roster spot this early. So it could be roster spot. I think Drew Smith was on social media saying that he's healthy. But healthy and being able to throw and being effective on whatever the Mets saw during rehab are two different things, and we really don't know. And who knows? He might be back. Maybe that's somebody that they're looking for over this. Steve feels Stearns is losing him. He says, I was pumped for the hire. He's not worth the hype. This mishandling of Richardson is the final straw. First year they got to the NLCS was fluky and mostly holdovers from the previous regime. Year two is when you make your mark, and he swings and misses, so to speak, this past year. He's not aggressive enough, and when he's aggressive, he messes up like the deadline. Too much inconsistency since Cohen bought the team. Most of the time missing the playoffs and having bad endings like 2022 and 25. What are the Dodgers doing so much better? It's more than just money. They do well. This year, Dodgers' payroll is only $11 million more than the Mets. Friedman is much better than Stearns at building teams. He's never missed the playoffs with the Dodgers. Stearns already has in year two. Friedman is very aggressive, but clearly isn't reckless. Stearns can't balance this. He struggles in this department. It's annoying seeing him get comparisons to Friedman. It's insulting that Stearns is getting paid more than him. The Brewers clearly don't miss him either. They've gotten even better, actually. Stearns is an average GM, better than what they had in the past, but he's not as good as promised, basically in purgatory. Well, that is a very harsh assessment of Stearns, Steve. Look, the Anton Richardson stuff, I thought he did a great job. I mean, Soto became nearly a 40-40 guy under Richardson, gets a ton of credit for the base running. I have a hard time believing that Anton Richardson is going to be the difference between the Mets making the playoffs or going far this year and getting knocked out. He's a coach. Coaches change teams all the time. It sounded like he wanted to see what was out there when he came back. The Mets had already kind of established some things. Also, if the Mets start to, and it's like any other company, they have a value for a position. They got to think about this not in terms of ball player money, but in terms of corporate structure. If the value for the position that you're in, you or I, in a corporate environment is X, and all of a sudden, because we're valuable, we do something really good, we all of a sudden demand $20,000 more, $30,000 more, you're blowing away the structure of the position, and then others who have been around deserve as much or not more. And look, it's not a matter of whether having the money or not. It has to go with precedent, and I really understand that. Richardson is a guy that if he really wanted to be here, could have probably taken an offer, it sounds like, right away and been here. He wanted to explore his other options. Then he came back to Mets. Sounded like he was trying to use them almost like a free agent. As far as the Mets and the Dodgers, I think it's too soon to rate Stearns. I don't have a problem with his deadline moves. I thought Rogers worked out well. I thought Helsley, might have been a little bit risky when you looked at some of the underlying metrics, But, you know, again, he gave up prospects that they had to make a decision on terms of adding to the roster with Rule 5, or maybe they had duplication throughout the system. I think Gregory Soto was okay. I think he addressed the issues at the deadline. If you want to criticize him for possibly not getting a starter, well, go back and look what the Rangers gave up for Merrill Kelly, and you tell me if you want to do that. Because Stern said it, there was a lot of painful deals. So going forward, you might actually have a feeling that, hey, the Mets and Stearns did a good job at the deadline because they didn't rip the farm for, what, 6 to 8 starts of Merrill Kelly. He was a nice arm, but not worth 3 pitching prospects. And, you know, Texas gave up some serious prospects for Kelly. You know, maybe quantity, but still, you know, they're organization prospects. And we talked a little bit about that when we looked at some innings options over at Beyond the Mic at the Premium Content, and you can go check that out. Dan Barry talked about Alonso. He talks about Schwarber DH lowering the need for Alonso's offense at first, which we talked a little bit about today, or Eugenio Suarez. We talked about that. I think they provide power. I think they're a little bit one-dimensional, and there's some risk of regression on each one of those. Moving Beatty to first, I don't think that's a horrible idea. Suarez, I don't know. Same idea with Bregman Barry. You know, I've heard about that as well. You know, he brings up Jacob Reimer, who's played some first base, and it's righty. So, you know, what Dan is trying to do is, you know, talk about some cheaper options without locking in Alonso into 5+ years. Dan also rightly points out that contracts, and he did a nice analysis over at Baseball Reference. You know, we talked about declining contracts, guys like Tino Martinez, Mark McGwire in their 30s. And he's right. You know, when you start to look and you do the analysis, and we've done this before over at Beyond the Mic, I think we did it, you know, a couple of years ago before the 2024 season when Pete's contract extension came up. You know, that is something that is, you know, something that's, maybe something that you should be concerned about at this point. So yes, those are fair points. I agree with you, Dan. Now, we'll wrap up here with two things. Our friend Sam wrote, "Are the Mets a favorable destination? The guy who was going to take Hefner's spot is picking the Yankees assistant job." He's talking about Desi Drusel over the head pitching coach here. Cone could also offer more money than Hal. Look, we don't know what that's really all about. You know, we don't know if he picked Desi Drusel the job over, you know, going back to the Yankees over Met job. He was rumored to be a candidate, but who knows? I mean, he came to the Mets and he went back to the Yankees. Are the Mets still a favorable destination? I'm not ready to say they're not. We hear nothing but good things about the culture, about how they treat players. I mean, Justin Verlander was talking about it this past season when the Giants came to town. I think Andy Martino's writing a book about the Mets and Cohen ownership, and he talked about how great they were to his family. You've heard nothing but good things. You know, I think it was big in the recruitment of Soto. So I don't think the Mets are at a point where they're not a favorable destination. I don't think some bad pitching down the stretch and a season in which they underperform their expected win-loss is going to change that. I think, you know, ultimately word gets around the league about how it is playing for certain teams. And if anything, it's New York and the fans and the media that would be an issue, in my opinion, before it'd be actual Cohen or Stearns or Mendoza or anybody in the organization. I think the environment, the expectations, the fan pressure, the media scrutiny, things like that, I think would go into making the Mets more or less favorable place to play, Sam. So I'm not ready to say that. Look, I think a lot of these are fair points you guys bring up, you know, but, you know, honestly, I'm not so sure it's time to have that conversation. I continue to say this. This is going to be Stern's team for 5 years. He's going on year 3. So ultimately, this year and next year and the next 12 to 24 months will go a long way in determining what kind of GM. Is this Chaim Bloom in Boston a disappointment, or is he going to start ascending into Andrew Friedman status? I guess we'll see. Final question from the chat room. They asked me about Lucas Giolito. Now, Giolito used to be a top prospect with the Nats. Has kind of settled in, and he's had injuries in his career to like a number 3. You know, before he was hurt, he could give you 180 innings, you know, 4-ish ERA, strikeout per inning. I mean, I don't think he's a bad option and that was the question in the chat room. Why I wouldn't make him my first option is I think they got a lot of the Lucas Giolitos in their rotation. I think they have Kodai Senga, who's like that. I think they have Sean Manaea, who's like that. Clay Holmes as a starter might be like that. David Peterson might be like that. I think they need, and I'll reiterate this, and I'll wrap up with this. I think they need to either see if one of those big arms is available, and after talking to Pat Ragazzo, I agree with him. I just don't think the hype surrounding trading of a Scooble or a Skeens or Alcantara is going to materialize. I think they got to figure out, you know, somebody who is young in their prime with upside. Now, I'm not discounting a Giolito or a Pablo Lopez. Both of these guys have different, you know, upsides and injury risk, and anybody has an injury risk, but I'm looking more at Joe Ryan, George Kirby, guys like that. I really like George Kirby. I really like Joe Ryan. Those are two names I'd like the Mets to see if they could pry away. It's not going to be cheap. I'd go there, and then on the free agent market, I'd see if I could bring in somebody who could provide you innings and upside, maybe like a Dylan Cease. I know Framber Valdez is out there. Giolito's an option out there. You know, Zach Gallen to me is an interesting one, and Ragazzo brought him up, and we brought him up over at Beyond the Mic. He's regressed a little bit. Can the Mets get him and work on his repertoire and kind of bring back the pitcher that was nearly, or was a Cy Young candidate just a couple of years ago? You know, that's another interesting name. But whoever they bring in needs to provide innings. They need guys who can provide 170, 180, or have the potential to provide 200 quality innings. Because right now, I don't think they have enough of that. So they're definitely going to need somebody like that, and they're going to need potentially an arm with upside. So it'll be interesting how that plays out this offseason. So some of the mailbags, if you want to get involved in the mailbag, leave a comment over at Beyond the Mic on one of the posts. Leave a comment in the chat room. Send me an email at MikeSilvette@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. I will try to get to them every week. I'll try to get to as many as possible. I try to make them pertinent. Hopefully I caught up. I didn't do it last week. Shame on me. But we're back at it. And look, the hot stove is here, and it will be an interesting offseason. I think our friend Pat Ragazzo outlined how interesting it's going to be. There'll be more to come, so stay tuned for more. Keep going to the website, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Join us in the chat. It's free. And if you want some premium content this week, we'll dive deeper into the non-Pete Alonso, non-Edwin Diaz options, so look out for that. Again, less than the price of one cup of coffee a month, you can get access to Talking Mets premium content throughout the week. All right, that's it. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you, Pat Ragazzo, for joining the show. You could check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You could get me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get the premium content. You can get the chat. You can get updates to the show. Check me out at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back with another Talking Mets next week. Till then, take care, everybody.